Welcome to the podcast to be named later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the podcast to be named later. Back with my co-host, Chris. How you been this week?
I've been great, Kelly. Thanks for having me back, bud.
You bet. Well, hopefully you're the co-host, so you better always be here. unless you're going to be like auditioning for another podcast or something, you know, I don't think we're at the point where one of us is going to be doing guest appearances on our own podcast yet, but hey, we'll see, man.
No, I'm with you, bud. I'm with you.
All right. We're a team. And speaking of team and family, I've got a guest that, 50 years ago, we were a team. I was the showee, and this individual was the shower, and I was taken to kindergarten to show off my twin sister Kathy's twin brother to her kindergarten class. I guess I'm repaying the favor some 50 years later by bringing Kathy on our podcast. Kathy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kelly. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing excellent.
Good.
So Kathy works in the world of print, and it's a fascinating world. It's a lot more than just, you know, ink on a piece of paper. When I say print and packaging and just really getting information onto the things that we all touch, use, and have, the things we buy and eat and use coming. So I'm going to chat with Kathy for a bit about the whole world of printing. So, Kathy, I'll just kick it off with some questions. And again, welcome to the podcast. So, I hope you're ready.
I am ready.
So, let's dive in a little bit, Kathy. You've worked in the printing industry in a lot of different ways, you know, for a while. And I've always been a little bit fascinated by just the number of things that get printing on them, or just when you think about the volume. I think one of the more obscure things that I never really thought about, I remember one of your jobs, you told me, oh, I take orders for tabs. And I remember going back and forth a little bit, and tabs, what the heck do you mean, tabs? And tell us more about that whole thing, like tabs, and what was that?
Well, that particular tab business was for the medical fields. When you would go into your doctor and you have your chart and you have your tabs at the bottom, we produce tabs for distributors throughout the country for doctor's offices, hospitals. One would think there would not be that many tabs printed, but it was quite the volume of tabs that went out our door.
When you say tabs, you're talking about the little things in the binders with the little edge that sticks off, right?
Correct. Yep, talking about those. There's different cuts. There's different, meaning there's different ones that have, you might have 4 to a page, you might have 8 to a page, you might have 10 to a page. Tabs made out of paper, tabs made out of plastic.
So when you say 10 to a page, what does that mean?
That means that as you're looking at 8.5 by 11 sheet, you can see all 10 tabs at one time. So they're going to be quite small. They'll be about 3/4 of an inch in length. You could have what's called a 1/5 cut, which means that you only see 5 tabs. And so those tabs are about 2 inches in length. That particular business, tab business, has downsized tremendously with electronic medical record keeping. There is not that amount of tabs. They're not generated anymore because everything is done electronically.
Another interesting one, I go to a hotel. And I get a card key. There's printing on that little envelope. right?
There is. Yep.
Tell, well, like, what's printing. Usually printed on it, and what's that involved, like, to make those?
There's a wide variety of those. There's different sizes, shapes, some that are just a sleeve, some that are like a little folder that open with the pocket in it. They are printed a variety of different ways. You can have them printed in one color, two color. You can start off with a colored sheet of paper, and you can foil stamp on them.
What does
you
that
can
mean?
Emboss them. Foil stamping is a type of material that is heat bonded onto the paper with a dye. You can have them embossed, which is also a dye, that the paper is, the dye is struck into the paper, which makes the image protrude out. Or you can do what's called debossing, where the dye pushes the fibers of the paper in, so the image goes into the paper.
So last week, Chris and I had a buddy on of mine, Dan, and I'll tell you the same thing I told him. I went to journalism school, and so I need you to break it down just a little bit more for me. When you talk about a dye, I don't think you mean like something that makes a color. When I think of the word dye, I think of something that, you know, turns the Chicago River green every St. Patrick's Day. What are these dyes you're talking about? What does that mean in the printing world?
In the printing world, so there's different types of dyes. There is what we call a cutting dye, which is a metal that is constructed into the shape of the piece in which you're going to cut out of a master sheet of paper. And then there's a foil embossing dye that has an actual image etched into it, that dye is then pushed into the paper to basically get that image in, that the paper now takes on that image.
So break that one down a little bit more. When I want to get this image into the piece of paper, you said it's pushed down. I assume there's some sort of machine that does that?
There's different types of machines. There's a foil machine. They're called Kluge's. There's Bopst. There's a variety of different machines that these dyes can go into, that then the paper is sheet fed through, and kind of like a sandwich, it kind of comes through. The paper is the middle piece, the dye is at the top, and then there's a counter at the bottom, and then the paper kind of goes through the two, and then it mushes together like a sandwich, and then it releases, and then the paper comes out with that image on it.
Is there mayo on that?
There could be, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, so, I got a quick question for you, Kathy.
Yeah.
So these dyes, I assume you must have a partnership with a metal shop of some sort. I assume they're most likely metal, right?
Yep. The cutting dye that would actually cut the shape of the piece, yes. And then our foil dyes, there's different foil dyes. There's magnesium, copper, brass, depending on the complexity of the art and what you're trying to do is... would depend, would warrant which type of material to use.
What kind of range are we talking in terms of size? Like, what's the biggest dye you've seen? Is it 6 inches, 20 inches? And then I imagine you can make them pretty small if you wanted to. I mean, probably, maybe not quite like the tip of a pen small, but probably like an eraser size or something, right?
Well, you're limited to, you know, when you're dealing with, I'll just say foil, for instance, You can go up to a piece that is, you know, 18, 20 inches that we can foil stamp, down to an area that's 3x5.
Okay, and then there's got to be I'm just picturing like a piece of paper. Like, I don't think you can stamp a piece of paper, can you? Like, that's too thin, right? It would just tear through there. Like, I'm trying to picture how, I don't know anything about this either, and I didn't even go to journalism school, but I'm just figuring if you're smashing something down, like you got to have some thickness to what you're smashing into. Like cardboard would make sense. Like I could see that, no problem. But yep. Like a thin piece of paper, can you dye that?
If you're foiling, you can foil. The thinnest would be like a 70-pound offset sheet of paper, which in layman's terms, if you think about a 20-pound piece of copier paper, that's about a 50-pound offset opaque. So it's a so you'd be looking, you know, at a 28-pound bond paper is similar to, let's just say, like a 70-pound opaque.
So break this down a little more.
Yeah, I need help with this even. Slow down, Kelly.
Are we going to math class and algebra here? I didn't.
There's a lot to it. Yeah, there's a lot to it.
Hold on. If I got a piece of typing paper, okay? Yep. I know nobody types anymore. But if I have a piece of typing paper, what bond is that?
20 pound.
And why is that? Is that because there's 20 pounds of what does that number mean, if you know?
Yep. So that number is based on, it's derived by a full sheet of paper. There's a mathematical calculation that determines what the weight of that paper is. Obviously, the weight is thickness of it, but when you go into, if this is a 50-pound or a 70-pound, it all has to do with the full size sheet of paper in which that smaller sheet comes out of. I guess that's probably the easiest way to describe it.
So when you say the full size sheet of paper that paper comes out of, are you saying in your world it comes out of something different than the 8x11 piece of paper I used to roll into my typewriter?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, what does it come out of?
The largest sheet that we can print on is a 26x40 sheet of paper.
Pretty hard to roll that into the old typewriter.
So I could go on. There's different types of printer. We're a sheet-fed printer, meaning we print based on single sheets of paper. There are web printers. They print off of a roll of paper, like newspaper. Newspaper.
Is that similar to the old days of the dot matrix printer and the fan fold paper, or something different?
Different. But we're talking, they come on big rolls, huge.
What's huge? That's okay.
They're huge. Just think of basically a toilet paper roll about 100 times larger in diameter.
Well, that would hurt if it rolled over your foot then.
It would, yes. So we are a sheet-fed printer.
And so you're saying
they're cut ahead of time then. And they're the size they're going to end up is exactly how they go in, and they come out the exact same size. Whereas other times, it may be a giant piece of paper, and then you'll cut it afterwards.
Correct. And that's where we would die cut the piece out of it with what we call a cutting die that would make the shape of the piece. And then you have a foil die or an embossing die, which puts the embellishment on the actual piece of paper.
So if you say the stuff that goes through your machine to print, you don't take that 26x40, in your case, largest piece of paper, and cut it and then print it, do you?
No, we print it that large, and you may have multiple images up on that sheet.
And that would be cut afterward?
And then it would be cut afterward and then die cut.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Sometimes we die cut that full sheet.
Let's just say that what might you print on a piece of paper like that size?
So let's talk about, you talked about going to the hotel. So you got a key card sleeve, a little sleeve that your card slides into. So when you think about that, and that's a piece of paper that folds, and it's a sleeve, it's folded in half to create that pocket. Well, we open that up, and it's, you know, 7 inches long by 3 inches wide. And let's say there's 50 of them on this sheet of paper. And then we print 50 up at a time. We take then that piece of paper, put it through a die cutter machine. That we would use.
I'm going to break this down a little bit, much like a football play, if you don't mind.
Okay. Go ahead.
Because I just, again, I curious how stuff works, man. And you've done this forever. So you start out with this, let's just say whatever, the 26 by 40 piece of paper. Someone figured out, oh, we can fit 5 across and 10 down or whatever it is. So you end up with this paper all blocked out of these, how many ever, 50 basically pictures or printing that's going to be the hotel key folder.
Yep.
That big, how do you set that up even? Like, how does that get set up to print those 50 times? What device does that?
Our art department through art programs. And then it's then sent to our plate room. Everything is direct to plate. So
okay,
it
so
goes
plate
right
room
from
isn't
the...
kind of what I'm going to eat my dinner on.
Yep. So they set it all up on the table. It goes to the plate room to print it out. And then those plates are then put onto the press.
But hold on. What is a plate here?
A plate is a metal piece that gets put on a printing press. And then ink is put into the press. And then paper is fed through the press. And the cylinders go around. Paper goes through the cylinders. Like the sandwich, and then the image is transferred onto that paper.
So, how is the plate itself made? Do you know?
Through plate making equipment.
And it basically, it has the writing or what? So that it.
Yep, it goes in and it has the writing on it. Yep.
So is it?
Is that thing? I was really curious. Does that thing get? I mean, I'm obviously it's a machine, so it has like some level of intelligence to know, like, hey, when it needs more ink and when you add it and how far it can go. So, you know, you just can't run it all day, right? You can't just load it once and then just keep printing and printing and printing, right? You must have to add it, or there must be a reservoir or something, right? So I'm picturing.
Oh, there
like,
is. Yep. Yeah. I mean, you have that, and there's. I mean, you could spend one episode strictly on how a printing press works, or that kind of stuff. There's a lot of things that go into play when you're printing something.
So these plates. Okay, if I'm just going to make like obviously the hotel folder, if you will, the writing, it has some writing. So something, cuts those letters a little, like etches them into the plate so that the ink can go into them?
If it nothing cuts, but there's that image is on the plate, and the ink. So the image is on the plate. The ink then transfers.
Could I feel that image if I touch the plate, or what is it like?
No, you could not. You could not.
Okay.
No. You couldn't. So the ink is transferred to the plate. And then the paper goes through, the plate has the ink on it, and then comes out.
So when the plate is done, is it the same size as that piece of paper, that 26 by 40?
It is. I'll say yes to a point. Obviously, there's gripper. You need gripper space. Your tail end has to. You have to have so much space left on your tail end. You can't have image there, otherwise, it's
okay.
It's
but so it's
not,
the, it's generally
is gripper just what you use to hold the paper in place? Is that what you're saying? There's like a border around
yes,
it, so
when,
you can
when
like
the
clamp
paper
it down
gets,
so it doesn't
yep.
move.
Okay,
yep,
so
when the
oh, keep on. Sorry.
No, what I was gonna say is so when. The paper is loaded into the back end of the press. Then there is a suction feeder that goes down, sucks up a piece of paper, and pulls it through. And the area in which it's pulling through, that's the gripper. So then that goes through the machine. The cylinders are rolling, and as the cylinders keep rolling, the ink is getting put onto that plate. The cylinders roll, the paper goes through, the ink goes on the paper comes out, the next sheet comes in, and we're talking, let's just say 8,700 sheets an hour are pulled through that machine.
So before you start pulling that paper through and all this, once the plate itself is made, if mm-hmm. you looked at it, what would you see?
I would see the image that's going to go on that that is going to be transferred onto the piece of paper, whatever okay. design the customer has come up with.
Is it one for one, or is it like inverted usually? Like, how does it work when you feed it through? Do you have to? I mean, does, if you looked at the image, like let's say I just had a you know, a paragraph on there that said whatever. If I looked mm-hmm. at that plate, would I read the paragraph as is, or does it have to go on like backwards? You know what I mean? In order
no, for you'd read You'd read it as okay. is.
And so, what makes that plate? Does some machine put the images onto the plate to start with?
Yes. Yes, they're burned into the plate.
Is that something you guys would? I imagine more than one place does what you do, but is that something you guys do in house? That seems like something you would send out. Like you would have a metal shop that handled all of that. You tell them, hey, this is nope. what we want. You guys do it in house?
No, it's all done in house because it goes through to the art department. They set it up exactly how it needs to print on piece of paper, then that file goes to our plate making room, and then our plate making room makes the plates, and then the plates are transferred out to the press.
I'll tell you what, this process sounds expensive. Like there's it sounds like, I mean, these machines cannot be cheap, right? So
some are not, but all in all, I mean, there's a wide variety of stuff we can do. I mean, not only after we're done printing it, then you can put your coatings on it. There's different types of coatings that can go on it. When you feel something and it feels really baby soft, that's the new in thing. You touch a box or you touch something and you know what I mean, where it's really, really soft like butter.
Yeah. Yeah, or you can feel stuff. Okay. Sometimes it's kind of like plasticky feeling, and yeah, I know
yep.
what you mean.
Yep. So there's laminate that can go on these after it. There's soft feel aqueous, which is like a water-based coating. Soft feel laminate after, or just a gloss aqueous, which again is just a water-based coating that makes it glossy. There's a UV. That can go on it, which makes it a really, really high sheen. And then you can keep adding.
I would imagine that's got to happen while it's still in its whole sheet, right? Like the last thing you do is cut these into. So if I printed 50, like we were talking, I would imagine mm-hmm. it goes through this whole process prior to the like cutting it out part.
Yes. Yes. So you basically bake your cake, which is making the sheet of paper, and then you add your frosting, which is going to be your coating.
That's a good analogy. Then, yeah.
With print, I always use food as an analogy. And then you
and then
add
you cut
frosting.
Your slices last.
So. Yeah, then you add your sprinkles, which would be like your foiling, your embossing, your spot UV, which if you want certain areas just to be a really high sheen. After that's all done, then you get your cutting die, and then you die cut them out, and then after they're die cut out, depending on what happens to them, typically they have to be glued. Then we have machines that these individual pieces run through to be glued.
So what happens if, okay, you did all this, and now my nice envelope or folder with my hotel card key is out there, and all of a sudden I notice somehow a spelling error or a font error or something. I gotta remake the whole die or the plate?
Yeah, you have to remake it. Yeah, you have to remake the die. You don't have to, because we're still, you'd be able to use that die to die cut it, but you have to make new plates to reprint it, and you have to reprint.
So, obviously, if you're doing all, is this how they print books also, do you know?
Books, basically, yes, those are done web. So, the paper is on a big roll, and those, they print it, depends on how the book is, but they print it, And then on the roll, some of it comes off completely done, like magazines, that kind of stuff. Some books are what we call perfect bound. Those are a little bit different. We don't do any type of perfect binding. It's quite the world.
So, do you have then? Is there just like some big warehouse of all these plates laying around?
No. The plates, the material of the plates are pretty inexpensive, so those plates are recycled.
That's what was going to be my question is, you know, so you're all done with this thing. Obviously, if you have like a regular customer, like, you know, Hilton is a customer of yours, and they're going to make more key card envelopes down the road. So you may hold on to theirs. But some of these other ones that are one-offs or one-time things, you just throw it back in the bin and have it melted down and you know, ready to put a new impression on it.
Yeah. So the printing plates, those are disposed of. Those are recycled. Foil, that's a different thing. Those dyes, the foil dyes, we'll keep, depending on what the material it's made out of. The cutting dyes, those are the pieces that actually cut the shape of the key card. Those we keep up to about 2 years, and if they're not used after 2 years, then those are recycled. But we have racks and racks of dies, numbered. They're in certain order, so we pull and continuously recycle.
Do these plates? Do they?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're going to print 1 million key cards. Do you do plate? Do the mm-hmm. plates wear out in some fashion? So you got to make a new one at some point with this process?
Yeah, depend. Yep, absolutely. It just depends on how many are up on the sheet, how it's printing, and sometimes it even depends on what stock it's on.
Okay, so this is fascinating to me anyway. I've got this image somehow burned into this plate of what the ink's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But how is that handled when there's multiple colors of ink? Like, I want a blue border around my whatever. How does the color mm-hmm. of all this work? What
so
tells
if
what
you
ink
have
to
a
go
piece,
where?
So each on the printing presses, there are different, I'll say, color heads. So our largest one is we have an 8-color press, meaning we can fill, there are 8 towers, and each tower can have a different color in it. And then.
So when you say a tower, is that like an ink storage thing?
Yes. And it's got the cylinders that that plate for that color is wrapped around. So if I'm doing something that's 3 colors, I'm going to have 3 plates. Each plate is going to have whatever area of that final piece has red. The next one will have whatever areas are blue. And the next one would have whatever areas are green. Those are put into the printing towers.
Okay.
And then in there are the specific ink colors. And then as that piece of paper is lifted through and the cylinders are rolling, they're all rolling at the same time, and that paper goes through, it lays all 3 colors at one time and comes out at the end.
So are you saying hypothetically, I just want to understand this a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pick a simple example first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to print a page that is 3 colors.
Mm-hmm.
All solid colors. This isn't obviously realistic, but let's say the first third vertically is red. The second third mm-hmm. vertically is green. The third vertically is, I don't know, pick another color, orange.
Okay.
So I'm in it, that paper is, and we'll just say it's 8.5 by 11 to not make this overly complicated.
Sure.
Are you saying that there will be 3 plates of each 1/3 of that piece of paper with that color?
Yes. So plate one would be the first third, plate two would be the second third or the middle section, and then the last plate would be the last third. And then as it rolls through the press, all the first color is laid, the second color is laid, the third color is laid. And then and it comes out and it's that way. Now we have different presses too that you can actually perfect, meaning it prints both sides of the sheet of paper at the same time.
Okay, now let me complicate this a little bit because that's how I am, I guess.
Sure.
The joy of having the family on the podcast. I, on my first third, want to now have a small vertical line splitting it of a different color. Does that now mean I need five plates? Because I've broken one of those things into three pieces. If you follow me, so let's say that first one was red, but down the middle of the red third, I want a vertical line that's yellow, which we haven't had before. So now it's going to go red, yellow, red, green, and then orange.
So what's going to happen is, You're going to have only four colors because I have a red color, a yellow color, a green, and an orange. So one plate is going to be all of the images that would be red. The next plate would be all of the images that are yellow. The next plate would be all of the images that are green. And then the next plate would be all of the images that are orange.
So how does this thing roll through then to do that? Does it? It must go, the orientation must be, it must not go through, like this piece of paper must not go through like a typewriter. I'm thinking of a typewriter. Maybe it doesn't go through that way, or what am I missing there?
Yeah, no, it doesn't go through like a typewriter. There's there's a top cylinder, there's a bottom cylinder, and then there's, so just think of it as, again, the sandwich. I have my top piece of bread, my bottom piece of bread, and then there's a couple other cylinders, and as that rolls, that paper is going through the middle of the bread, and the two pieces of bread are smashing it together to transfer that ink onto that piece of paper.
So does a dip do these different? Go ahead, Chris.
I'm just, how does the ink not bleed? You know what I mean? Like when you have these, so the way you're describing it, I mean, it's got to be spot on perfect, right? To cover, like in Kelly's example, you have the paper broken up into thirds. Well, the lines, you can't have, like if you have white paper, you can't have like a little white line showing, right? Like it has to be solid and the red has to meet.
Right,
the green,
the registration,
like,
yep.
Spot on. And how does spot it not bleed on into each other? That's my question.
When
is,
you, yeah. So when that art is developed, there's different ways in which you set that art up. There's trapping, the way you trap the colors together. It also, when you print something, colors are laid down in a specific order for that trapping. Now, yeah, I can add to it, when you think of a photograph is made out of what's called CMYK, four colors, cyan, magenta, right, yellow, and black. So you think of printing a picture through a printing press. That picture is pulled apart. So much of it is cyan, so much of it is magenta, so much of it is yellow, and so much is black. There's four plates with those specific colors, and whatever of that image or percentage of that image is cyan, whatever percentage of that image is yellow, whatever percentage of that image is magenta, and then how much ever it is black. And then once those all lay on top of each other, that's how you create that four color picture. And there can be a wide variety of percentages of each of those colors, and then you to come up with certain tones or other colors, if that makes sense.
It blows me away how accurate this is. Obviously, I've printed things, and obviously, I've had, you know, I have pictures, and it just blows me away that these things you know, how accurate and clear and how fast they're made. You know, it's just the machines that they come out of are just incredible. Like, I can't fathom. I mean, I work in the world. I have paints in my world and stuff, and inks and dyes and stuff are in those. And it's like, you know, to be able to do it in this rapid fashion and have the accuracy be so spot on is just kind of mind-blowing to me, honestly.
So, Kathy.
Kelly.
I'm going to give you some homework, and hopefully you'll do it, unlike Chris, who sometimes didn't do his homework.
Why are you throwing me under the bus, Kelly?
Because I'm just being factually accurate.
It was like one time. It
depends on what you're asking in my homework.
I know that you enjoy audio description.
Yeah.
I want to have you come back on the podcast, and there's got to be video or something out on the internet of how these printing presses work. I'm intrigued when you're talking about these cylinders and what all they're doing. I'd like to invite you back to break that part of this whole process down a little bit more, because it doesn't work at all like I guess I was envisioning, or I'm not sure what I was envisioning, but I find this fascinating. You up for that little homework?
Yeah, sure, I can do that, absolutely.
Great. So we've printed a piece of paper, and we've printed one thing, a hotel key card folder. Mm-hmm. Do you have a machine that folds that and all that stuff?
Yep. So after it gets printed, then it goes to a machine that die cuts that shape out. It's flat. And then it goes to a specific machine. And then it, let's say... it glues it. It folds it in half, glues it, all in one pass.
And
they start out flat, and then they come out finished.
So how does it? I mean, does that again? You give it instructions that say fold at 4 inches, or like, how's that all set up?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's based on different plates, so the piece of paper goes in. You're really testing here, because I don't run the pieces of equipment. So it basically goes in to, I'll say our package gluer, goes into the package gluer flat. It goes in so far, and then it, let's say in this case, it's a sheet that folds in half, but there's glue tabs on the side, so that the glue tabs are what are going to glue the two pieces of paper together when you fold it in half. So it goes in, it knows it goes in so far, it applies two strips of glue, and as it applies the two strips of glue, then it comes back, and then it folds that other piece over, and then basically comes out. There's more to it, you know, there's some other cylinders that it might go through to help adhere the two together, but basically it starts out flat, adds the glue, and sends it out. It's like a big conveyor belt as it goes through once it's glued.
So, Kathy, this is all really fascinating. And so far, all we've done is printed out, you know, some hotel key cards. I'd love to jump to kind of the other end of the spectrum. And maybe I'm going to be shipping something to all of my hotel guests in a box.
Mm-hmm.
You do that as well, correct?
We do packaging. We do a couple different kinds. We do paperboard packaging, which would be like your retail packaging. You're selling one of the hottest markets right now is cannabis. So we do cannabis packaging.
So you do pot boxes.
Gummies or chocolates. We do pot boxes.
Okay.
Chocolates, gummies, CBD oils. Those are done on what's called like heavy cardstock. We also do packaging on an e-flute kind corrugate. Okay, there's different grades of corrugate. We print direct on e-flute material, digitally direct to that. and then that's table cut into whatever shape, whatever type of box it is.
So pause for a second. When you say we print direct,
yeah.
Are you talking about that same whole process that we just outlined of how printing works? Like you make you make plates and all the rest. What's the thickest thing you can print on? Packaging.
Through our printing presses, about a 32-point cover.
Do you know about how thick that is?
32 points.
Okay, and there's the conversion of points to inches.
Totally different ballgame.
Well, give me an estimate, man.
Give
is
you
it the
an
size
estimate.
Of a penny?
So,
is it the size of a like how big would it be?
Hang on. So I'm gonna use. So if you do a file folder, okay, like a manila file folder, that is typically about a 100-pound cover, okay? So that's 0.1 whatever. 32 points is 0.32 of a decimal. So it's 32 okay. one-hundredths.
Of an inch?
So it's...
Or what?
No, of 100, 32 out of it's now you're going way too far here, buddy.
Okay, we'll pull it back. Give me an idea. I got a box, a big
give
old...
you an idea how thick it is. So if you were to, what do you get at your house that's in a box, Kelly, like from the store? Like
cereal.
An aspirin.
Cereal.
Aspirin's coming up. Cereal. Well, that's cardboard. So that might be an 18 point. Might be a 20 point.
And are those cereal boxes printed the same way with plates and all that?
Yes. Yes.
I guess in a way you could say probably here might be a way. You can fit whatever thickness, and if it doesn't fit, I'll usually be able to tell because there's some other kind of label or something that I could separate from the box itself. Is that a fair way to think about it?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you could.
So my box that my phone comes in, that's probably too thick?
Okay, so now you're looking at different types of boxes. So that box that your phone came in, that box is actually not the box itself is not directly printed on. That box is going to be what's called a turned edge box, meaning that there's paper that's printed, and then that paper is wrapped around that box. It's adhered to that box after.
It's glued on there?
That material.
Okay,
it's glued on there, basically. Mm-hmm.
Then that kind of is what I said in that would be an example of something that's too thick to fit through this printing process.
Right. Now, when you're dealing with packaging like an e-flute, corrugate, we have a machine that we can print directly onto that e-flute material.
Do you have an idea of something that might be able to, like, what's something I as a consumer would experience that is this e-flute corrugate, if you have an idea?
Yep, that pizza box that we had in Fort Walton.
Okay, that, although, to throw another wrinkle at it all, because I remember you also telling me there's rules about what you told me you can't print pizza boxes. Want to talk about that for a minute?
Yep. So we cannot manufacture a box that is going to have food directly touching the inside of that box. We can print a box if the food is contained in something pre-wrapped, if it's not directly touching that box.
Is that because you don't have the proper procedures or whatever to, is that something, you got to get certified in and you got to say, hey, listen, we use this type of materials. We have, our facility set up in this manner. It's clean, protected that way.
Yep, you have to be food safe certified, kind of like.
You know what's funny? I never even thought about that. I mean, I get pizza all the time, and I never once thought about like where the box comes from. I don't know. It just came. It came from Domino's. I don't know. They got it.
So let's yeah, let's.
So there's. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Or let's stick with this pizza.
No, I was gonna say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Go ahead.
You guys are cute.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Clark.
To podcast listeners, I guess we're really bringing out all the family details. My family's nickname for me is Clark. That's a whole story for a different podcast from childhood as well. So the pizza box that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's got, I mean, if you ever try to even close that thing after you opened it once, it's got perforations and folds all over the place. How's that all work? I assume it comes flat to start with and some machine turns it into a box, or at the pizza store they turn it into a box, or what?
Yeah, nope, at the pizza store they do. So the stuff is, for us, if we print on that effluent material, it's printed flat. On a large sheet of paper, it's like, let's say, 48 by 96 inches long. It's a different piece of equipment that it's printed on. It's digitally printed.
So hold it, Paul. I am going to ask you. Is this, because before you told me the biggest thing you could print on was 26 by 40. This is a totally different thing?
Yep. So that's
that
a paper. Sheet
fed. We're in cardboard now. But
that was card. Yep. So...
Come on, Kelly,
the other stuff
up,
is
bud.
Paperboard, and this is e-flute, like corrugate, and that are huge sheets, because when you think of a pizza box, think of taking that whole box completely apart and laying it flat. That's quite long and quite wide.
So, Kathy, you just mentioned something again where you said digital printing in these bigger boxes, and I've caught up, and we're in cardboard, not paper, Chris.
Thank you.
I eventually get with the program. Is that a different process then? It's not plates and all that? How does that digital printing work?
Right. With digital printing, there's no plates. It's, I'll say, like a toner, and it gets sprayed onto the sheet.
Why isn't everything so digitally printed then?
Because of the time in which it takes. So if you're digitally printing something like these corrugate boxes, I can't print as many as those as I can when I run it through an offset press.
So Chris, I think you were wondering about this whole time and all that. Want to ask about that again?
Yeah, I was just curious, like the time it takes, you know. So obviously this is really involved, and I'm not talking about the obviously it's. Takes time to make the plate. I understand that, right? You got to send it to the art room, and they got to develop the image, and you got to get that put on the plate and all that. I'm saying after that, after you're ready to go, right? You have your toners full or your inks full, and all the things are ready to rock. I was just curious, like how many so I did a bunch of printing today at the office, and mm-hmm. It was pretty slow, and it kind of. I had to print 3,000 pages, and I was there for hours. And, so I was just kind of curious. You know, you're obviously on a much, much larger scale, and you guys, this is what you do all the time. I print, a couple times a year. And, how many can you bang out in a day? You know, once you're all set and ready to go and all the artwork's done and the plates are ready and everything's, assuming all the machines are working properly and all that, like how many can you print, like, in an hour or a day? That's what I was curious about.
I mean, the average speed, I would say between, 10 and 15,000 sheets an hour. But it depends on what that piece is. You know, it might run a little bit slower than that, maybe 8,000 sheets an hour.
What would make it run slower?
Could depend on the number of colors, the paper in which it's being printed on. There's also different things because you have to get up to color, and then you have to maintain your color.
What does that mean?
Means that you have a set color that you have to get to, and there's equipment that you can take digital readings to see if you're within scale, meaning there's a range in which that color is acceptable. And as the sheets are coming off, the pressmen are checking to make sure they're within that range.
So is it kind of like an athlete where, you know, it's got to warm up a little bit when this ink's, when this whole thing first starts flowing, that everything's not quite jiving, so the first few things coming off the press, the color's not quite right because everything's not just humming yet?
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And then you have to maintain that color throughout the run. And then there's different things that can change within, you know, that make things change within that run, or, you know, the paper in which you're printing on. If you're printing on something that's more of a porous sheet, and I'll say like an uncoated sheet that's got a texture to it versus running something that's a smooth sheet that's got a coating on it already. Those are two different things, and the ink lays differently on each of them. If you're running an uncoated sheet of paper, the ink is going to seep into that sheet, so then your color is going to be, I'll say, more muted, versus if you're running on a coated sheet of paper, meaning there's a coating on it, like a hard surface, that ink lays on top of it, so your ink colors are much more vibrant. So you have to make sure that your colors are within range. You could be matching something that someone sent you that you have to try and get to the color based on the sample in which they sent.
So, Kathy, I know we were talking about making boxes, and I kind of took us on a field trip back to the world of printing on those boxes. So I want to jump back to the boxes. So we made a pizza box. But give me a little more details on how you make those other types of boxes. You said, I actually apologize, I forgot it was something pressed or folded. But like, let's just say
okay.
A nice computer box.
Rolled edge.
There you go. Chris is paying attention.
Yeah, close. So we don't do turned edge.
Oh.
But hey, you're getting parts of it.
It was a quality guess.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, well, so, guess what? If that was football, you were supposed to run left wide receiver, and you went right. Now there's an interception and a run back for a touchdown.
So the other type of box, okay, so if we're talking pizza box, digitally printed, right on the e-flute material. Once it's printed, then it goes to another piece of equipment, which is basically a table, and it's table cut. The computer is set up to know that there's, let's say, three on the large sheet of paper, and it knows exactly where to cut each one out. Okay? And then they're left flat. It cuts them, it scores them. If there's a perf in it, like we talked about that pizza box gal, where it had the perfs in it, all of that is done all right in line. The computer is set up to note where the scores are, where the perfs are, and where the box actually cuts out of the actual material.
Side question for you. Maybe this is a little bit more of a field trip, but it's something I've learned, I guess, which I found interesting to know. Curious what you know or think about this. So recycling is obviously an important thing for the world and the planet. I think one of the things I've heard that people can often like do a lot more harm than good. If paper or cardboard or anything like that has any food on it at all, you better not get it in the recycling at all, because it trashes the a whole load of recycling stuff. Is that, you know anything about that?
No, I don't. I'm not necessarily in grave detail, but I can tell you that is also what I have heard, and I do know that you can get nasty grams on your garbage cans if they find that you're putting contaminated stuff in your recycling bins.
So someone probably actually made a plate for those nasty grams, and they probably carry a supply of them around, correct?
Correct, correct.
Hey, we're putting the pieces together. Speaking of putting the pieces together, let's go back to these more complicated boxes. Let's move beyond pizza box, because sometimes you order equipment and, wow, the box, you get a phone or some of the computers and stuff, and wow, you almost hate to throw the box away. It's so nice, and it's, like, really sturdy and durable, and it's got little containers inside more than, you know, the hot lunch food tray. How's all that work, and how's that get built and done? Do you guys do that?
So the containers inside that box, those are called trays, and those trays are designed based on whatever pieces are going to go fitting into them. And we do make trays. We make trays for our e-flute boxes, and we make trays or holding pieces for our paperboard packaging. You know, sometimes you open a paperboard box, something that you get off the retail shelf, and you open the lid, and then there's a piece of cardboard attached to the box, and you got to lift that out to get your other piece out. We make those as well, and it's all designed around whatever piece is going inside that box. We get customers to send us their material that's going in it, and then we have a full CAD department that they design the box around those pieces. We'll use your phone box, for example. I don't do what you're saying your phone box would be, because that's a turned edge. We don't do turned edge boxes. We do what is called a turned edge is basically on a heavy duty cardboard, like chipboard. We don't work with that material to do boxes. We do what's called litho wrapped, that material is mounted onto e-flute material. And with litho wrapping, you can do other embellishments. A plain e-flute box, all you can do is print on the box, that's it. You can't emboss, you can't foil, you can't put any of your sprinkles on top or any type of frosting on it. Your a litho-wrapped box, you can, because you're actually printing a sheet of paper, then you're putting your frosting on it, and then you're putting your sprinkles on it. And then that piece, after that piece is all done, then that gets mounted to the e-flute material, and then that gets die cut out.
So do you know, and you might not, but these, let's just say whatever the box is and it's got these trays, when you send it back to a customer, I assume the boxes aren't all assembled, it's just all the pieces, or what do you send back to them?
Yep, they're not assembled. And they're not assembled because all we would be doing is shipping air. You know, if we had somebody construct all the boxes, we'd be shipping air. Some packaging is machine filled. Some is hand filled. Most of what I deal with are packages that people are hand filling.
Do you think, I'll give you an example. Like, I know when I get a phone, so it's, you know, it's got a little kind of a oval-shaped thing it used to have with a USB cord. It's got another big cutout with the phone put in it, usually wrapped in some kind of plastic. It's got another thing underneath that, usually with the instruction book. You know, do you think that's all machine-filled or hand-filled?
That's all hand-filled.
So are you saying someone's sitting there and wrapping that little piece of paper that I take off, probably around that's holding bundles the USB cord up, someone has to sit and do that?
Some of it. Machine filled would be like your cereal box. So the cereal gets put into a plastic bag, sealed, goes down the box is flat, goes down a conveyor belt, gets constructed, cereal gets dropped in it, goes down the conveyor belt, closed, sealed, and then it goes into a shipping container box.
All right, I'm going to add a little more to your homework.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm sure on the...
worse, Kelly.
I can hear that paper coming out. That's good. You're taking notes.
I am.
I think it'd be fascinating if you can find, we'll come back and have another episode with you about describing some of this in more detail. Just, I'm sure someplace on the internet we can find videos of both machines boxing up stuff and humans, and just give us all a sense of that. I mean, I think both for the curiosity's sake of what this is all like, and then really I think just out of respect and thinking about, you know, we get all this stuff and we unbox it, and really to have some respect, not that I don't, but just to get a sense of the people that are doing this hundreds of times a day, day after day. Mm-hmm. Just, I think it'd be great. We'll do some research together and come back with you describing and a little more of these parts of it.
Sure, sure. I mean, and I can go in. We actually have a full hand finishing department. You know, not every key card or every folder that we produce can it be machine glued. Some of it has to be hand done.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Well, Kathy, I know we've only scratched some degree of the surface of the world of printing, and I know we started with the folders and the tabs, and I know there's a bunch of other types of things we could talk about. You know, I'll throw you one more curve.
Oh boy, okay.
Because how does this work? How do they print on napkins? How do they get, those are so foldy and wavy. And yet you go to some restaurants and they've got printing, and it's even, you can feel it. You know, it's all work the same way, or how does that work? Do you know?
I'm going to say it basically is the same way. I don't know if the material comes on rolls or how it comes, but there's different pieces, types of equipment that are out there to be able to do the different embellishments on those substrates. You know, we work strictly with cover stock for die cutting. I can't die cut anything that is text weight, like a piece of copier paper. What I die cut has to be thicker than that. But there are manufacturers out there who can die cut text weight or copier paper weight items. We do not, which would then hold true basically if they're going to, you know, put the sprinkles on the napkins. It's different types of equipment that are geared for that substrate.
All right, your extra credit question for the night.
Oh boy, okay, what do I get? Not to do my homework?
No, there you go, got to do that. Hey, the football season's over. We've got to keep the podcast to be named later running, or else it will become the podcast that was.
Okay, what's my extra credit?
And, well, you might know this one. I'm just thinking about all these different things. It's my understanding, right? I can go down to the grocery store and find Band-Aids for kids with Barney, or maybe it's not Barney anymore, showing my age, but other things.
Cocomelon. Come on, get with it. Cocomelon.
Okay, well, I know you have grandkids and I don't. So how's that work? How do they print on Band-Aids?
Again, it's different pieces of equipment that are developed for the different types of material. You know, there's label printers. There's people who print on label stock. There's, we also do checks. You know, you order checks online. We do checks.
Now we're talking, Kathy. Let's get some of those going.
Hey, I'd take an order of those with your account number, please.
Checks.
We do that. There's forms, you know, like we also do, you know, when you get your annual insurance cards and you get a piece of paper and your insurance card is attached to that piece of paper and you got to peel it off.
Well, that's not even the worst one of those. The one that's the worst.
The perforated ones that don't actually tear.
Yeah, that's
you
a, that's
your
a,
insurance
that.
Card in half.
We're going to bring back Get Off My Lawn for that one.
Yeah, those things, you can tell that they sort of tried to give you, like, some perforation. Like, it's supposed to, like, you would think it's supposed to tear, but it never does.
You get those ones sometimes, like, three sides of it are perforated, and you got to pull all the perforations off one side, then it folds out, and it's all this really thin paper, and it's a mess.
And then you got to wiggle it back and forth.
Yeah. And then you're if you're not careful, you end up ripping the thing in half. So
Yeah. So I'll tell you those that process, they're called integrated cards. What those are called.
They better work on a different name. Call them annoying cards or Well, Kathy, I want to thank you. Obviously, you know, this has been fascinating. I know it's a little bit different, but I guess, you know, one of the interesting great things about it, as all of us here know, coming from a big family, is we have people that do a wide range of work and are pretty knowledgeable about their fields. And this is probably the most I've talked to you about your work in a long time, if ever. So thanks for educating me and sharing that with not just myself and Chris, but with our podcast listeners.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just service customers or inside sales for people. There's a lot of stuff a lot of knowledge that goes into it, so that you're making sure that you understand what the customer needs, what they're trying to achieve, and making sure that the end user gets truly what they want. Because I don't know that I shared this. I don't work directly with the end user. I work through distributors. So if Walmart, I'll use that as an example, has a product that they want something for, I don't work directly with them. They go to like a print buyer, and that print buyer comes to me.
Sponsorship still available.
Yes, we are, because we want to go to Radio Row next year. So
just putting it out there.
It's really fascinating, though, if you think about in the world, all of the items that have printing on it. For another episode of the podcast to be named later, we'll talk about what would it take to get Braille on all of that. But that's a whole different kettle of fish. We'll talk about it at a later time.
Sure.
Again, Kathy, thanks a million. And Chris, thanks to you, a great co-host again for another fun episode.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. This was fascinating. Like, you know, there's a lot of this stuff that, you know, you just kind of, I don't know, you just take for granted, you know what I mean? It just exists in the world, like as simple as the pizza box where, you know, like I said, I don't know, it just comes from Domino's. I don't know how it's made. They put my pizza in there you know, it's great when you get to, you know, hear people who are inside various industries and have a deep understanding of the specifics that goes into these things. And yeah, it's cool for me, man. I appreciate you having me, Kelly.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Kelly. I appreciate it. And I'm glad that you were interested and that you learned something.
I definitely did. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the podcast to be named later.